Welcome to those who are just off the boat. Any besides Dick and Brad who just arrived? Anyone else new in the village? Yeah, so welcome. And on Monday, so this is the second of three, and I announced to the community that you don't have to have been here on Monday to come on Wednesday and Friday. And there may be others who weren't here on Monday also, but just so you know, on Monday was the day we talked about the Reformation in 1517, of which the 500th anniversary is approaching next year. And we talked about various dimensions of the Lutheran Reformation that continue to be important for us today. And we did a thing where people went to different corners of the room based on what religious tradition they were part of. And so we learned that that day there were Lutherans present in some abundance. There were some people who were raised or are presently Protestants other than Lutheran. There were no Catholics in the room, present day Catholics. And there were some questioning folks kind of wandering around the center of the room. So sort of perhaps the sort of representation of those groups has shifted a little today. I don't know. We're not going to do that again. But probably we have some religious diversity in mind as well as sort of a core of Lutherans here, I'm guessing. So today is about this question of how is it that Lutherans in particular are responding to the challenge of climate change and the urgency that we face, ecological urgency and emergency that we face today as a species, as a civilization, as a people, as a church. So I wanted
is
to
that true?
Start
that
with...
That Lutherans are responding
well,
to
well, it is. That's what today's session is on.
I'm curious.
Yes, yes. So you'll find out. That's right. So I thought we could start by sort of brainstorming this question. Well, maybe just start with kind of a meta comment, actually. So as we talk about the language of Reformation, there's the implied form in the middle of that word, right? Reformation. That some form has been lost or distorted and needs to be reformed, right? So some form is needed that was lost. So Holden, the summer copy of the Village Voice, the Holden Village Voice, has reformation on the cover. So sort of a meta question of these sessions as a whole has to do with what is the form that needs to be reformed when a reformation is happening? So what was the form that had been lost when Luther came along and, you know, was nailing 95 theses on the door of the chapel, the castle church? What form needed reforming at that point? And then what form needs reforming today, right? If any. Maybe we're fine today. Maybe we don't need any reformation. We got it. Maybe we're all done and we don't need reforming. But if we do, yes, there's a voice here in the front row implying that maybe we still need reformation
definitely
today. So what? How do we know that? How can you tell that something needs reforming, right? What's the form that needs to be reformed among us in any given context? Is, again, sort of a meta question that might direct us, we'll come back to this tomorrow, in the third session. But just in terms of Holden, not to discuss this now, again, we'll come back to it, but what form marks Holden? What is Holden? What is this place? How can you tell when you're here? How can you tell what distinguishes Holden? What form is it? What makes that form Lutheran? Is it just, you know, we say Holden is a Lutheran community, therefore it is? Or is there something about the form of it, the life of it, that is distinctively Lutheran? What would that be? What is that form that might need reforming? How do we recognize this form when we see it? And then, so sort of opening from this question of form and reform, to think about, so before we're going to see a film today, a short 15-minute film. So before we move into that, I want to just start with, what do you think, as you think about the ecological situation of the world today? So on Monday we talked about Lutheran spirituality. What do you know about the Reformation? What do you know about kind of what was important to Luther and the Lutheran tradition? So today is about this ecological question, and then we're going to put the two together for Nelius. here and show how there's connection. But just in terms of the ecological, life of the planet, what needs reforming? What's wrong? What's wrong ecologically on Earth today? I don't have a whiteboard.
In terms of the church, is
no, the Earth.
The Earth. Well, yeah. We're getting warmer.
Yeah, we're getting warmer. Okay, yeah. Climate change and climate disruption, climate instability. So climate change can sound sort of, it's bad enough, right? But it might not sound so ominous, but it
climate instability.
Seems like it's going to be hard on us and lots of creatures on Earth. So climate instability, climate chaos is language sometimes people use to describe how kind of upsetting this reality already is and will become. So climate change, what else?
Well, the jet stream just dipped below the equator this past week for the first time ever.
So there's evidence that something's up with the climate. That's right. So yeah, so climate chaos names how we don't even know as the planet warms what's going to happen. Like now the jet stream is doing weird. God only knows what it's going to be next week, right? Or next year, or 10 years from now, how the climate warming, how the planet warming is going to change the climate in ways that create instability, yeah.
Our human dependence on fossil fuels.
Yeah, so we've got, so part of the problem with climate change is we're burning all these fossil fuels, so we're taking all this carbon that was in the ground and deposited there over a long period of time, and we're all of a sudden, within a very, very, very short geological span of time, releasing it all into the air. And you're naming our dependence on that, so part of the problem is it's hard to just shut that off. We could just tomorrow stop using oil. We could just all decide, right, immediately. As of now, we're going to stop having any emissions, but that's not easy to do because we're so dependent on these for the way we get our food, the way we get our water, the way we move around, the way blah, 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 blah. Yeah, right. So the economy is implicated in this. Yes,
there's a lot of people out there using more and more resources.
Yeah, okay, so human population. Yes, a staggering rise. So there's this set of charts. How many of you know Larry Rasmussen's book, Earth, Honor, and Faith? Anyone? A few? Larry's a great Holden person. Maybe you've heard him here, a Lutheran ethicist, retired now. And he has this great book called Earth, Honor, and Faith, in which, in the first chapter, he has a series of charts. So you might be aware of the famous hockey stick chart that first sort of showed the graph of, average temperatures. Originally, the very first one showed average temperatures, so going along for the last 500 years or so, I think the original chart showed, kind of going along in a temperate kind of way, and then all of a sudden, like a hockey stick. And then that's been debated and added to or whatever, so in Larry's book, he's got a series of these, and all of them have this hockey stick sort of form. So CO2 in the atmosphere is going along and then everyone's looking for his book over there in the library and I couldn't find it. But one of them is human population. So human population, too, was kind of going along in a general, very slow increase over the last thousands of years. And then hundreds of years starts ramping up. And then in the 20th century, the very same thing. So yeah, the more humans there are, the more we're going to just consume and burn of fossil fuels now that we've, learned how to do that on a broad scale. And we're eating it all, like we're consuming the cells on Earth, the biomass of Earth. We're eating it all, we're burning it all. There's a lot of us. Yeah, we're not, haven't yet eaten it all, but yeah. We're converting a lot of it to agricultural use. That used to be wild use. It's in order to feed all these people. A whole bunch of the arable land of Earth is now converted to agricultural use in order to feed the, yeah. There were more hands, and back there next.
Well, a different perspective is not so much just what are we doing, but who are we? How do we understand what it means to be a human being?
Yeah.
And how we fit into the context
Good.
Of the whole ecological
That's
structure
right.
Of
so
the
we're
world.
Going to be talking about that
and
today.
What are,
That's right.
What are, and what are, more crassly, I suppose, what on earth are people for?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what we're talking about.
Those
that's
are
right.
Great, those are big questions.
Big questions. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. It has implications for how we relate and treat the rest of it, relate to and treat the rest of it. Yeah. Back there.
More thinking of not just that there's more of us, but we all want more.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, I don't have one coat in my closet. I have four coats.
Jesus said one Coke, give the rest. No. Right.
Yeah. My husband preached a sermon on that in early December.
Yeah.
And I had a coat purchased for him for his birthday present.
And he had no other coat, right? This was to be his only coat. No.
No,
yeah. 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 So not just more of us, but as our technology improves, or so to speak, has developed, has made us more competent, we can create all the stuff that we want. Yeah. And that creates a buffering also from the life of the rest of the planet, because we can now live in buildings with temperature control and climate, fossil fuel climate control, and we are not so dependent on actual connection, so it reinforces the sense of distance and alienation as well. All this stuff does, yeah, as well as emissions. There's also freshwater crises already unfolding on Earth and will continue. Desertification of places that had been along with loss of habitat for agricultural use, there's also, as the climate warms, increasing desertification. And as glaciers melt, less fresh water will be available for people who rely on glacier-fed rivers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So these problems all kind of interlocking, right? You know all this. This is review for us, right? Not new information. You have your hand up back there. So there's sort of, I pulled out, well, and this doesn't even mention extinctions, extinction crisis developing, pollution questions, both kind of just the pollution we live with in cities, water pollution that makes the fresh source water sources we have undrinkable, but also stuff like chemicals out there in the atmosphere that mess up the hormones of animals, including us, and the reproductive capacities and mutations and cancers and all that kind of stuff, right? So there's that whole level as well. So yeah, what needs reforming ecologically? That's a big question. And then how? How to face such questions, of which we're just sort of dancing on the surface, right? We're just barely naming a fraction of even the issues that we could name. We could keep this up all day long, right, if we were developing each one of these in depth. And it's easy to be overwhelmed and or depressed or unable to imagine, paralyzed, having any meaningful way to take action, that maybe we just want to go distract ourselves on Facebook, or maybe we don't know how to connect with others in a meaningful way. So it's easier just to not face any of this, not look at all this. So how then do we learn to face difficult questions together and make meaningful change? So all of this is sort of part of the question. And maybe that'll stop before we start the film. That would be good. Yeah. So I wanted to, let's see, so I pulled out four, I was going to try to make it three, because three is so nice and Trinitarian, and sort of seems like a nice symbolic number, but I ended up with four sort of meta names for the reforming I'm sort of thinking about or worrying about in my life as I think about these questions. And one is just all the stuff we've been talking about, climate change, extinctions, loss of habitat, freshwater loss, pollution, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff, all as it weaves together, human overpopulation. Well, overpopulation is a problematic term that applies that some people are over. We have too many, and that would be other people, kind of. So being careful about language of overpopulation can be problematic. So human population increase. So all these kind of issues, if you will, that we've been naming is one sort of meta thing. Another that goes along with that is the accompanying loss of connection to the broader world that I named briefly in reference to, dang it, I can't remember your name back there. Yeah, you. Yes. In reference to when to your comment, I was saying that we get ourselves buffered by all this stuff and all this convenience from the life of the world. So this alienation, the sense of separation, that also goes along with what Dick mentioned about who are we actually as a species, and we define ourselves in distinction from the rest of the world instead of in connection with the rest of the world. So a second piece of these interrelated questions has to do with how do we restore connection? How do we get to know again who lives here? You know, the actual pine beetles, bark beetles, which this one and that one, and how they live and which trees they live in, and how do you even know what's a Douglas fir, you people or me, right? So we don't even know, most of us, what tree is this? Maybe we know the tree in our front yard and two others and that's it, or whatever, to be able to recognize birdsong and blah, 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 blah. So how do we learn to reconnect with the larger world? That's another thing. A third, so the loss of relationality, what Larry in his book talks about, the Earth, Honor, and Faith, Religious Ethics in a New Key, he's using a musical metaphor through the whole book. So he might say that the world, the larger world, has lost its song for us. We've stopped listening to the song of the world. We're so tuned in to human music and human voices, the music of the larger world, we've lost that. Third, not just we have separated ourselves from the rest of the world, not in reality. Of course, we're still just as much an animal as we ever were, but psychologically or in terms of our perception, we think we're different. We think we're separate above. But we also think God is separate. So there's a dimension where we've sort of created this sense of God being very distant from the world. The goal of Christianity is to be removed from the earth, right? We're to go to heaven when you die. That's to get away from the earth is the goal of Christian life in many popular spiritualities. So there's often this implicit dualism. God is up, God is away, God is not earth, earth is down, right? What else is down? Hell, right? The devil is down, God is up. Everything, you know, so there's this implicit dualism. Whites, males, are in the image of God, and everybody else is sort of lower down and closer to earth. And so these unconscious, conscious and unconscious hierarchies and dualisms that privilege certain people on earth, separate God from earth, blah, 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 blah. You all know this stuff too, right? And then along with that, the human justice questions that are all mixed up into all of this. So how is it that we, you know, have food on our plates? In fact, a whole bunch of food, and we throw a bunch of it away, right? Well, some people starve. And is it that as the waters rise, you know, the ones who did all the damage, who are driving the SUVs and refusing to change and climate denying, are not the ones who are going to be suffering the effects of climate change first? That's the people who live on islands and who have no other recourse and who are already suffering famines and droughts and in places where they can't just go to the store and pay a little more for food like we can in California, but where they're dying already, blah, 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 right? So human justice questions mixed in with all of this. So these four really super complicated sets of questions all woven together. So we can get overwhelmed. And how then does Christian faith respond? So I want to show this film, which if all of this that we've just named is sort of our analogy to what Luther was facing. So here's Martin Luther, you know, 500 years ago, facing a church that's corrupt, economic problems, exploitation of the poor, theology enmeshed in exploitation of the poor. Similarly complex and overwhelming questions that Luther was facing, and he had helped to create a Reformation. So we've named together a bunch of questions we face, and how shall we be part of a Reformation today, an ecological reformation for the life of the world. So the film is not a Lutheran film, but I hope it'll help us talk about this question in an engaged way. So I will be asking you at the end what you feel watching the film. That'll be my first response question, feeling question. Not what you think yet, but what you feel as you watch the film. So, can you turn off the lights over there?
Us, we are energized in a new way to take responsibility for the planet and its ecosystems. In other words, our response to the magnificence of cosmology and the story is a responsibility to its continuity.
Our story shows how profoundly related we are. It shows that we are involved with each other and have been for a long time. So it is not the case that the Earth was assembled and then we were added to the Earth, that it was there for our purposes. Rather, we came out of the Earth.
Wisdom
and organ universe. Then, in a cosmological wink of an eye, 100 billion galaxies swirled into being. We didn't know there were any galaxies in the universe 100 years ago. We thought maybe there was just one. Now we realize there's 100 billion galaxies. So we're just beginning to understand some of the dynamics of galaxies. And to think that they actually have intrinsically the intelligence or the ordering power to bring forth all of this elegance. And so the galaxies themselves, you know, they organize all the material and give birth to new stars. And when scientists really began to look at the galaxies this way, they realized that even something like a living cell, that's news. That's another way of imagining our way into the universe. And now these whirlpools of galactic creativity begin to fulfill their cosmic destiny as they each give birth to 100 billion stars. When these first stars reach the end of their life cycle, they collapse in on themselves and erupt into immense cosmic explosions called supernovas.
Thomas Berry refers to the supernova event as a cosmological moment of grace. He calls it the great sacrificial moment because the death of the star is what enables all future life to evolve. The supernova embodies the archetype of death and rebirth. It's a mythic moment on a cosmic scale.
Out of these clouds of stars, billions of second generation stars are born. One of them was the star we call our sun. Left over from the formation of the sun was a wisp of debris that swirled itself into a necklace of 9 spinning planets, the jewel of which was the swirling mass of molten lava that was to become our home, the Earth. Out here, on a tiny planet suspended in perfect equipoise, the force that set the galaxy spinning and ignited the stars produced its next miracle. A universe within the universe. It was the birth of life. Now this miraculous manifesting force began to clothe itself in biology, expressing itself in increasingly complex and sophisticated expressions of beauty and elegance.
Earth, as we see her now, 5 billion years after that initial experience, has arrived at such a complexity, such a development, such a journey of that original fireball that she is now alive in her own right. In other words, the universe and Earth has reached a complexity in which universe awakens into life and is alive.
Think about it. Everything we see around us has developed from the boiling cauldron of the early Earth, a sphere of lava that miraculously gave rise to the sea and the atmosphere, and then life in its infinite expression. Brian Swim says, the Earth was once molten rock and now sings opera. So all creativity and all consciousness arises in some mysterious way from the depths of the Earth itself.
Right into the heart of this immense celebration of biological creativity, the universe produced its next surprise. An upright tool-using primate with an opposable thumb and the remarkable ability to reflect on its own existence. In essence, after nearly 14 billion years, the universe had created a way to become aware of itself.
We are the universe reflecting on itself. We are Earth becoming conscious. And this changes everything.
Human beings lived in harmony with nature for eons, until they discovered how to cultivate crops and domesticate animals. While most humans continued on in a nomadic way, some chose to settle in one place. And in a mere 10,000 years, they created everything we now consider to be human history.
green, wide, the lushness of palm and the stability of cypress and the grandeur of the mountains and wide lake oceans with their foods and teeming life forms. We are part of a journey so much more than we ever could even imagine.
As we move into this understanding, we have a new identity of ourselves as cosmological beings. Not just Americans, not just French, not just Democrats, not any small category. We are the universe in the form of a human. And it's true of everyone. It's an amazing new understanding of ourselves that is so profoundly inclusive. And everyone is part of this. Everything is part of this. And we discover as well a profound kinship that no matter what being we're talking about on the planet, we are related. We're related in terms of energy. We're related in terms of genetics. We're all in one way or another, like a form of kin. And that I just it's overwhelming. So it's just now coming into human awareness. It's going to take a lot of reflection to embody the full, but it is a massive change. It means much.
The universe arose and gave rise to the galaxies. The galaxies gave rise to the stars. Our sun gave rise to the earth. And the earth gave rise to life and to all that we are. And now it is causing us to awaken from our dream of lonely isolation, so we may rejoin the great community of life and take on our part in this stupendous unfolding story. As Thomas Berry says, this is our great work.
Powerful beyond our, beyond my wisdom. And that's, could be dangerous, couldn't it?
Weird, could be, yeah. So wisdom as something we might need, yeah. It's bigger wisdom, yeah, feelings.
I feel a profound closeness to everything.
Yeah. Piece was helpful, what they said about being alarmist and what an alarm is supposed to do. So if I feel alarmed by the film, that's what it's meant to do because it's supposed to wake us up.
Yeah, good. So a sense of smallness, humility, of closeness, connection, of alarm, and connected also with the power we have that's beyond our wisdom, if I'm hearing right.
Certain shame that we as humans with the ability to reflect have gotten to where we are now.
Yeah. There's an irony in that, isn't
yeah.
there? Yeah, we have these great brains.
Yeah.
And the capacity to experience this closeness and love and connection. Mm-hmm. And yet we also have this capacity not to see.
Yeah.
And to act in ways that, yeah, so a sense of shame. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I think I felt two things that just kept coming back. And the first was blessed.
Yeah.
And then the second was responsible.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my word.
You had the same. You felt a sense of responsibility. Exactly. Yeah. And connecting to blessing. Yeah. I think the film does want to make that connection by opening up the miracle.
Yeah, the beauty.
Yeah, this film makes me cry just about every time I watch it. I watch it every semester in just about every class I teach. And it's so awesome, that sense of blessing and grace and beauty. Yeah. And then, as you say, both of you have this sense, too, of responsibility. Because there we are. Here we are, humans.
The comic book Spider-Man used to put it, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we have this ability to reflect. We have this ability to create, you know, co-create.
And destroy.
And destroy.
Yeah.
And we are the only species on Earth that seems to do that in abundance, the destroy part.
Yeah.
No other life form really takes more than what they need.
I heard someone say there's some bacterium that they think caused a mass extinction. You might know this. Caused a mass extinction at some point. One of the previous mass was cut, maybe. And somebody said that's the only analogy they've been able to figure out to our. Except the bacterium probably wasn't consciously choosing, right, with its big brain to do this thing. Yeah. Yeah.
But on the other side of this power and intelligence and all that is this. The smallness, like you just said, my brain just can't.
Yeah, right. Good. Yeah.
Should I have gone to school to become a great scientist? Yeah. I would have loved to, but I don't have the brain to do that.
Right? Well, none of us has the brain to understand it all, right? So it's the film, I think, is naming that for all of us. Yeah, that we think we're so smart, but we don't have the slightest grasp in some sense of the mystery of it all and the connections of it all. We can't create a forest. We can't, right? We can't do all this. Yeah, we're so.
Many of the things that we think we did pretty good.
Yeah.
Really isn't so.
That too, yeah. We think, this is the century of progress, right? The early 20th century was going to be the Christian century and it was going to be progress. And all this, what we think. We're doing it so good, and then we discover, in the process, a lot of unintended horribleness. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I remember in my geology classes thinking about the major events that they talk about in the film.
Yeah.
And it was humbling for me to hear my professors, reflect on the fact that the Earth doesn't need us.
No.
We need the Earth. Yeah. So the Earth has been fine. I mean, not fine, but the Earth has recovered. The Earth will keep going throughout these processes.
Yes.
It's actually us that needs the Earth.
Yeah.
And so that reframing for me was helpful because it then makes it up to me to save myself as opposed to some wider imperative to save the Earth. Because sometimes people can't, it's hard to have an incentive to save the whole Earth.
Yeah.
But if it's to save myself, then that becomes more of an imperative.
Yeah.
And that's just an honest human thing.
That's right. Yeah. And it's true. The life on Earth will continue past us, even if we succeed in our apparent goal of wiping out
the Earth
our civilization.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And the species will probably go on in some way, no matter what we do. But what do we cherish in our human lives, and is that worth bequeathing to future generations of humans, along with a flourishing and abundant and beautiful Earth to be human in? Yeah, that's a different question. You're right. Yeah. So what does a Christian vision look like that's adequate to this scale of life in the universe? Or what does theology and worship and church life and spiritual practice look like that invites us into this astonishing miracle and mystery? And invites us into this kind of on-the-ground, careful responsibility as we have capacity, any of us, rather than distracting ourselves away from or alienating ourselves away from the beauty and mystery of it all. How can our Christian traditions serve to reconnect us to this bigger story and to this bigger responsibility in a way that's life-giving and generative and empowering and playful, not despairing and grim and shutting ourselves down, is the question of this session and of our lives, right? This is our great work, as Thomas Berry puts it. So he has this this hypothesis that at certain points in human history have come crises, and a given society has to be able to, that becomes its great work. And for the first time we're facing this as a species. This is our great work, to figure this out. And we don't have a lot of time. So we need together to come to a new way of being human on Earth that will allow future generations to inherit a beautiful and abundant and healthful planet to live on. And in the meantime, to be human about it. You have your head up back there.
Whenever I feel myself in a situation where we're dealing with environment in the world, the one thing that always comes back into my head is Psalm 8, and that we were given dominion. Mm. And the word is given dominion.
Yeah.
But that, to me, is given responsibility. Yeah. But then what do we do to take responsibility? Mm-hmm. You know, if you... To me, that verb is very important.
Yeah, good. It's also connected in Genesis 1 with being created in the image of God, who, as we know and as we just saw, is a creator of endless and continuing abundance and beauty and flourishing. So if we're acting, the dominion God gives us, those in the image of God, is precisely to continue that more and more abundance and flourishing and life, right? Not to destroy it all. So when we act, when we use what we call our dominion to destroy it all, we're not acting in the image of God, right? So it's not the meaning of, people use that, so not that you're doing that, but people use that language. If God gave us dominion, after all, that means, right? But by severing that from the image of God, the God who made all of this, then we're not really acting with dominion at all. So what you're describing, it sounds to me like recovering that Genesis 1 sense of what would it mean to act as if we were in the image of God toward all of this. That's what dominion means. That's what I'm hearing in how you're playing with the verbs. Yeah. Uh-huh.
There's a sizable Christian community that doesn't understand that.
Yeah. And throughout history, there have been many, Christians who have thought that way. Yeah. Yeah,
I think there's another, I mean, I think clearly from our traditions we're lost. I mean, we are. And I don't care what part of, there are some aspects of Christianity that do see this differently. Mm-hmm. And we're not in dialogue with one another. And I don't think we Lutherans are. And I think we Lutherans are really lost. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we developed a pattern of thinking and doing theology, and we can't think out of the box, quite frankly. And so we're still thinking in terms of solving these problems by a new understanding or a new ethic, and et cetera, et cetera. And we're doing it within the context of the human experience, and we can't get around to asking very simple questions. What have we missed? And I think one of the things we've missed is we've missed something so simple. Every time we come to worship, we confess our faith in the creed, but we don't ask, what does it mean to have faith in the Creator? We've responded to the Creator by doing ethically responding. But what does it mean to trust God in creating?
Yeah, that's a great question.
And do we really think God knows what God is doing? And what does it mean to trust God who's continuing to create in the context of everything we see? You know, how do we see the presence of God? And I think unless we have that different perspective, mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be hard for us.
Mm-hmm. It already is.
There are, the Celtic tradition has a mm-hmm. wonderful way of looking at this mm-hmm. That they've had from the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw light in the beginning of this, and they see light as the presence of God in everything. Mm-hmm. So that when they look at everything, every person, every cell, every rock, God is there, creating. And so, as God is creating, we talked about Reformation is reforming, it's ongoing, which is a living relationship, which image really means is living in a relationship with God from the Hebrew.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think there are ways of doing this, but we've got to open up and say, what have we missed?
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, there's a lot we can keep discovering. That's right.
That's what we need to talk to, besides ourselves.
Exactly.
I mean, I think that the Bible is just full of examples mm-hmm. of how human beings and the created world interact in mm-hmm. positive, mutually renewing and supportive and beautiful ways. And so I think their dominion is certainly one of those examples mm-hmm. and themes, but there are a lot of others that bear study. Just quickly, for instance, Moses in the burning bush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He takes his shoes off. You know, he's on holy ground.
Exactly.
How could that be for us?
Yeah.
You know, to think, okay, I'm on holy ground.
That's right.
You know, and then in Job, there's a beautiful verse about, you know, listen to the birds and they will tell you. So I think this listening before acting, listen, just be still and kind of listen to creation and what it's, this, you know, the message, maybe like you were talking about in your sermon. And then the last is, I thought about this during Lent this year. Jesus goes into the wilderness, you know, for 40 days, and for so many years I thought, how terrible, you know, I mean, he was all alone, how did he survive, and, you know, so devastating, and then finally I thought, you know, he wasn't alone in the wilderness. There were creatures, and there was life in the wilderness that provided for him, and he was not alone. He was by himself, but he was not alone, and that got him through. And that was just, you know, helpful to me to think about it in that way.
Exactly.
So
making that
to offer that.
Yeah. So you, in your reading of that text, narrate this shift from seeing ourselves only in this anthropocentric world, where it's God is only concerned about humans, right? Christianity is only about human salvation and maybe not just going to heaven when we die, but certainly just humans on earth too. It's all part of this larger divine life. And we're one species among many, and our relationships are in all directions all the time, so that, when you read the text, suddenly something clicked for you. Well, look at all the other creatures that were there. So something had shifted in you mm-hmm. and how you were able to see in that text, oh, look at all that other life that was there that we don't normally see as Christians.
Yeah, and then I actually found a little children's kind of black and white sketch that actually illustrated this very thing in some powerful ways.
And in Mark, it actually says he was with the wild animals and the angels with him. So it actually names that in Mark, but we don't hear it. We don't, it doesn't register that there's all these other creatures that we're in relationship with all the time as we breathe, as we eat, as we, in our interspecies, multi-species bodies and lives. Yeah.
I always start with thinking about how much more we know about science now, but yet the psalmist mm-hmm. and the biblical writers also knew that we returned to dust.
Yeah.
That we already have that connection with dust.
Yeah.
That it's part of our human awareness mm-hmm. is where we came from and where we're going.
Yep. You're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. Yeah. We're made from dust, Adam from Adama. Adama in Hebrew meaning, you know this, but Adama in Hebrew meaning dust. So the human, the earthling made from earth. Yeah, so that's right. The biblical tradition has a lot there that we don't
It's not just a more recent scientific discovery, but there's something about human knowledge that goes way back.
Yeah, that's right.
To understand where.
And certainly indigenous knowledge had a big sense of the cosmos and relationality. That's right. Yeah, so we're sort of coming out of this period of, hopefully coming out of.
For me, and what I've been reflecting on a lot of late is the fact that we as the Lutherans, and you talk about Lutherans being lost, I think you're right. We were in such a hurry to become Americans that we bought into American civil religion in a way that has been terribly destructive. I mean, I came out of the tradition of the American Lutheran Church, and as opposed to
the Lutheran Church in America.
Or just why can't we just drop the be the Evangelical Lutheran Church or whatever. I mean, I believe that we've taken on all the trappings.
Yeah.
You know, we put up the flags, mm-hmm. you know, and we forgot that countercultural mm-hmm. piece of our faith.
Yeah.
And we have, and part of the problem has been with Lutherans is that we've emphasized grace so much, which I do. I mean, yeah. and we can do nothing for our own salvation,
right.
that we've decided to do nothing. Yeah. We'll pray about. Mm-hmm. Well, that's nothing.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, I'm going to pray about the young man that was killed by a policeman yesterday or last night mm-hmm. in the heartland of Lutheranism. And I'm going to pray about it, but I'm not going to do a damn thing about it.
So this is a good connection. I have to wrap it up back to Monday's session. So I'm going to hand out a two-sided thing. Let's call this side one, is called Lutheran Spirituality in the Life of the World. So I typed up the themes we talked about on Monday about Lutheran spirituality, one of which was this cheap grace thing,
yep.
although that I only typed up the positive side, not the, because I want to choose things that we can build on in a generative way, and cheap grace is not going to take us very far.
Nope.
So what are Lutherans good at? And then how do these strengths animate a Lutheran or Christian spirituality of reconciliation, not just between God and humans or among humans, but also with Earth and its creatures? And then there are some reflection questions for you, whether or not you want to come back tomorrow and discuss them, and we're going to take it a little further tomorrow, so about spiritual practices. So what practices give you life, peace, rest, energy, and joy? What practices connect you most powerfully to the life of the world? And you can understand that Christologically or biologically or both together as one thing. What practices connect you to humans and other creatures of all kinds from whom your privilege blocks you? What practices connect you to those from whom your privilege might otherwise block you? What waters, woods, gardens, creatures, elements, etc. near your home reveal God to you? And from what forms of alienation from the larger biotic world do you most urgently need release? If absolution is meant to be the power of God to release us from our sin, not just to excuse our sin, right? So we're back to Bonhoeffer and costly grace, not cheap grace. Then from what do you need releasing? And then on tomorrow, we're going to be talking about rewilding word and sacrament. So practices of Lectio Divina with the Book of Nature, not just the Book of Scripture, sacred reading, but reading the Book of Nature as God's word, God's voice, God's face and heart. Baptism and baptismal affirmation into local waters, and Eucharist, predation, food bodies, death, life, and interspecies flourishing.
Wow.
And then on the back is the table of contents of the book I told you about the other day, which is a volume I'm editing with a colleague, Jim Martin Schramm, who's an ethicist, called Ego Reformation, Grace and Hope for a Planet of Peril. We're writing it for Lutherans for the 2017 500th anniversary, and it's a collection of 16 essays by Lutheran scholars looking at various topics, so you'll have the table of contents for that as well, just to refine. So this is for tomorrow and beyond.
Thank you.
Send these around. And I think
Just to give those of you who have been following Lisa, and she's referencing her session tomorrow, if you haven't looked at the schedule yet, there were some requests for changes in the schedule. So Lisa is actually going to be on at 5:45 after supper tomorrow evening.
Between supper and Vespers.
Yep.
And we're going to be outside. Hopefully it won't be raining. We're going to be out in the creek. I will be in the creek. You can be in the creek if you want. So eat quickly if you want to come to the session. And so, yeah, it's a little complicated tomorrow because of other things. So between dinner and Vespers, after announcements at dinner, we'll head on out. And if it's raining, we'll meet somewhere else.
Meet on the Ark if the weather is good. If the weather is not good, creekside.
So we'll be creekside regardless. We'll be creekside room, or yeah. We'll be creekside.
Yes, either way. But start at the Ark.
We start out in creekside.
To go to the creekside.
And then, depending on, go together to the creekside.
We could do that. We could just say meet in creekside, and then we'll go to the creekside. If the weather's good. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I was suggesting, so that we,
we don't have to guess. I've posted it the other way. On all the schedules. I've written it on, okay. And I don't want to have to go around and run around and do all the schedules again, so.
Sometimes things are set in concrete.
Is there a time on the schedule?
It is not. Yes, I've rewritten it on all the schedules everywhere.
So 5:45 on the Ark.
So when you say, 5:30 on the Ark.
5:45, whenever announcements are done.
Okay, so we meet on the Ark.
Yeah.
Okay, so we don't have to know where on the
Ark. Right,
okay.
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
That's.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.